Okay, we're starting here on the top of Samach Tet Amud Aleph, seven lines down. The Gemara here is talking about the source for the fact that a woman who has a biyah psula, first of all, disqualifies her from eating truma, and second of all, disqualifies her from marrying a kohen. So the Gemara discussed the different sources in the psukim. And then the final question of the Gemara was with regards to Eved and Oved Kochavim, as well as possibly Chayavei Kretot. How do we know that all of those are also covered by this din? Because the Pasuk itself uses the word Tiyeh or Havaya, which implies that there's the ability to have Kiddushin. Having Kiddushin only is possible with a Chiyuvei Lav. So that indicates that a Psul from a Chiyuv Lav would disqualify her. But how do we know about Chayavei Kretot? And how do we know about an Eved and an Oved Kochavim, none of which have Kiddushin? So the Gemara only addresses one of those, which is Eved and Oved Kochavim. And the Gemara says that's because it talks about or speaks about this woman who is an almana or a grusha. She is a widow or she is a divorcee. You can only have a widow or a divorcee if she was married. She's unable to accomplish a marriage with an Eved or an Oved Kochavim. By the fact that she can't accomplish a marriage, she can't be an almana or grusha. And so as the Gemara concluded, that only someone who has almanut v'gerushin would be under this din of returning to her father's house. But if she were not to become an almana or grusha through the dissolution of the marriage, then she wouldn't return to her father's house. So that would mean that by an Eved and Oved Kochavim, she doesn't return, she does not get truma. They would posel her for truma. Rashi says that's the same din for kretot. Chayavei Kretot are under that same umbrella because they also don't have Kiddushin. If they don't have Kiddushin, they also don't have Almana and Grusha. The other hand, Tosafot just says that if you're Chayav for a Lav, or a Lav creates a Psul, then certainly Chayavei Kretot are going to create a Psul. It's almost a Kal v'chomer, an obvious extension of that fact. And therefore, the Gemara doesn't even ask about it because it's so obvious. So that's where the Gemara left off. And it says, now, maybe we could explain this differently. Ve'ema. So someone who has the ability to marry this woman can have kiddushin with her, which would be a chiyuve lav. Then if she doesn't have offspring, she doesn't have offspring from this individual, then she can return to her father's house. But if she does have offspring, she will not be entitled to go back and have truma. Someone who does not have the ability to create kiddushin and therefore not create Almana ugirusha. So afagav ditlei zara namitechol. There, even if she has offspring, she should still be able to eat. Now, the concept, or it seems almost backwards, but we're going to be more makil in a sense by the case of Evan and Oved Kochavim, who do not have almanut and girushin, then she's going to go back, whether she has children, doesn't have children. The reason being is because the yichus of those children is somewhat in limbo or problematic because they're coming from an Eved and an Oved Kochavim. Now, even technically, they will follow her, but nevertheless, are they really considered to be Zera because of the status? They're not Jewish children. They're going to be either Avadim or Ovdei Kochavim, possibly. And therefore, the Zera will not impact her. On the other hand, when she has the ability to have Amanut or Gerushin, then Zera, the offspring, will have impact on her. Because the Pasuk speaks about Amanut v'Gerushin and speaks about offspring. So then, only people who have Amanut v'Gerushin does offspring matter. In the other scenario, offspring will not matter. And that's the suggestion of the Gemara over here. Gemara then says, Im Kain, Ribuye Leviya Bisraelit Lomali. If that's the case, then what's the point of adding in a Yisraelit and a Leviya? We learned that out from the word Uvat. But Uvat, the Gemara says that's a Riboy to include not only a Kohenet, but also a Livia and an Yisraelit. So now the Gemara says, if this is the explanation of the Sukkim, then Kohenet versus Livia and Yisraelit, Hafshitalon, that's so simple. Cave into Kohenet, Gufa Mifsala Bezer Yisrael. A Kohenet herself was ruined by having a child from Shuma to go back to her father's house. Certainly a Yisraelit or a Leviya will not be entitled to eat truma in that situation. So then what are you teaching me? What are you including them for? You don't need a Riboy to tell me that a Yisraelit and a Leviya can't eat truma anymore. If a Kohenet, who's really entitled to go back to her father's house, cannot eat truma anymore, then certainly these individuals can't eat truma anymore. The only way this makes sense is if you explain the pasuk to say that when you don't have almanut and gerushin, you're disqualified completely, then that has relevance. It has relevance by a kohenet. It also has relevance by Yisraelit and Leviyah. That tells us that if they have a biyah with a pasula, it ruins them from the possibility of getting truma. So that's the Gemara says, your explanation of the pasuk is not tenable, because otherwise, why do I need to include Leviyah and Yisraelit? It would have been an obvious outcome of the pasuk. I wouldn't need a specific riboy to include these individuals. If you explain the pasuk about children apply, or the issue of children apply, when you have almanut or gerushin. When you don't have almanut or gerushin, there is no truma, period. Doesn't matter whether you do or don't have children. Then there's a reason to be merabeh, the Yisraelit and Leviyah, to say they're also psulim in this instant. And that's why the explanation of the pasuk is the way that we have it. Which is that in a case where you have kiddushin, then the child will cause a problem, but so will the bia psula. In a case where you don't have almanut and gerushin, there, it's irrespective. Child, no child, anything that goes on, this woman is disqualified because that is a bia psula. And that's the riboy that we have here, that by Yisraelit and Leviyah, the same thing would be true, that the inclusion of them in this restriction, that if they have a bia psula with an eved ove kochavim, will also disqualify them from truma. So now, ulu Rabbi Akiva. So this is all premised on understanding the pasuk of being lotiyeh, which means havaya kiddushin. Well, kiddushin take place with chiyuve lavin. That's for everybody except Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that even by chiyuve lavin, kiddushin are not tofsim. So how is he going to explain the pasuk now? Damar ein kiddushin tofsim bechayve lavin. According to Rabbi Akiva, says that kiddushin are not tofes bechayve lavin. Well, my kitiyeh be ishzar. What is the kitiyeh now? It should just say ki tibael. Almana ugrusha lamali. And then on top of that, what's almana and grusha have to do with? If you explain the pasuk being with kitiyeh, that's talking about havaya and kiddushin, then I understand why you need to talk about almana and grusha. On the other hand, if, according to Rabbi Akiva, where there's no exemption for kiddushin with regards to chiyuvei lavin, then all the pasuk is saying is ki tibael. If you have bia with someone who's pasul, it ruins it for you. So that's the case. It wouldn't matter who the bia is with. Doesn't matter if it's chayve kreto. Doesn't matter if it's chiyuv lav. Doesn't matter if it's an eved, ove kochavim. The pashtura pasuk now means you have bia with someone who's pasul. It ruins it for you. If that's the case, almana v'grusha lamali. What do I need almana v'grusha for? We needed it to teach us that an eved and ove kochavim are problematic. But Rabbi Akiva, who's explaining the pasuk as being loti bael, then it would apply to everybody across the board. As long as this person is a problematic bia, it would ruin it for you. So where it says, almana lachmir aleha, ugrusha lakel aleha. Almana to teach us a chumra, and grusha to teach us a kula, betzricha. And we need both of them. Diash menina almana, if you just told me about a widow, almanahu dechilet leizara achlo, in a case where it's an almana, a widow, and she does not have offspring, then she goes back to her father's house to eat truma, mishum dechazia dekuna, because she herself is still ri'uya to marry a kohen. Aval grusha, a divorcee, delo chazia dekuna, she can no longer marry a kohen, ema afagav delet lezara, even if she doesn't have offspring, lo achla. Maybe she would not be entitled to eat truma when she goes back to her father's house. So that's the tzad of grusha that teaches us the kula, that a grusha still eats in her father's house if she doesn't have offspring. Viashmin and grusha, if you told me about a grusha, grushahu, de eat lay zara, lo achlo. A grusha, when she doesn't have children, will say she doesn't eat, mishom, de lo chazi le kuna, because she is not uya to marry a kohen. Aval amana, de chazi le kuna, and amana, who is uya to marry a kohen, ema afa gav de eat lay zara. Even if she has children or offspring, nami techul, she should go back and still eat from her father's house. So tzricha, so both of those are kamash malan. The kamash malan teaches me that almana is subject to this rule of if she has children, she doesn't go back. She doesn't have children, she doesn't go back. As well as the fact that grusha is subject to that din. Each one of them you would have thought might have been otherwise. By grusha, you would have thought she's completely out of the parsha of truma because she's no longer ruya lekuna. This comes and tells you if she doesn't have children, she can still eat. Almana, you would have thought is entitled to truma no matter what, whether she has a child or not. This comes and teaches you, no, if she has a child, she's not allowed to go back. If she doesn't have a child, she can go back. So that's the explanation of Almana Grusha according to Rabbi Akiva. Tosafot and many of the Rishonim ask here, why was it so simple to the Gemara that Rabbi Akiva doesn't need the pasuk here of Tiyeh? Because we've seen earlier in the Masechta that even according to Rabbi Akiva, the Amoraim were arguing about what Rabbi Akiva's Shita is. Even Tanaim were arguing within Rabbi Akiva's Shita as to whether Rabbi Akiva means only by Chiyuvei Lavin, that it's Kedushin and not Tofsin, but by Chiyuvei Asei, they would be Tofes. Or there were those that said that even by Chiyuvei Lavin, that's only if the Lav is because of She'er. But if it's not a Lav of She'er, it would be Tofes. So we have instances where for Rabbi Akiva, Kedushin are Tofsin. If that's the case, you could explain Lotiyeh in its simplest form, like we did. It just will be a narrow scope of incidents that are included, and the rest will be included from Amna Grusha. So why does the Gemara go through this? Most of the Rishonim answer that they got to the bottom line quickly, which is that instead of going through that process and saying, oh, according to this day, they just got to the bottom line, according to the day that says, according to Rabbi Akiva, there is no Kedushin Tofsin, period. In all instances, this is how you would have to answer it. So they got to the bottom line, but it's true that according to some of the Shitot within Rabbi Akiva, you wouldn't even need to go down this path because they have Kedushin Tofsin in certain instances. So now the Gemara says, Ve'ema, Nivalalib Sola, if she has Bia with someone who's Pasul to her, Af Machzir Grushato. Why don't we suggest here that Machzir Grushato is also included under this? Now, in an instance where an individual is married to a woman, that woman, he divorces, she goes off and marries a third party. After that, she either divorced or widowed from that party, she comes back to her original husband. That's Machzir Grushato. Machzir Grushato in a normal circumstance is not problematic, but here she's problematic because she was married in the interim, that there was a third party in the middle. Because of that, he is not allowed to take her back. Now, when he takes her back, obviously she is pasul, she is not the proper wife that he should have. How come over there, when he has bi'ah with her, we don't say that that is posel her from the truma? That's what the Gemara is asking here. If you're telling me that someone is nivala de psula, someone has bi'ah with someone who is not appropriate for her, here the husband is not appropriate for her because she married someone else in the interim. So therefore she should also be disqualified from truma. So why isn't that the case? We know that's not the case. The Gemara knows that that's not the halacha. Why not? The Gemara says, le'ish zar amar machmano. The pasuk says that kitiyeh le'ish zar. She marries a foreign individual. This foreign individual means someone she has no relationship with whatsoever. Mi shezaretz la miikara. Someone who was always an outsider to her. Lafukehai delo zaretz la miikarahu. To exclude this situation in which this person is not a foreigner to her. I mean, they have a relationship, or they have a pre-existing relationship. That relationship no longer makes him a zar. So therefore, you need two things in order to be posel the woman from the truma. You need a biapsula, but you need a biapsula from someone who is a zaretzla, someone she has no relationship with, no engagement with. That will exclude the case of machzir girushato. It will also, which the Gemara doesn't mention here, exclude the case possibly of sota. In the case of sota, where the husband warned her and is now taking her up to Yerushalayim to have her drink from the mesota, and he has bi'ah with her on the way up to Yerushalayim, that's also possibly a case where she has a pre-existing relationship with the individual, and it's a bi'ah psula, because the husband is restricted from being together with his wife until we clear up this situation. So that might be another instance of this case where Zaretz Lami Ikara might impact, because there again, there's a pre-existing relationship, and therefore that bi'ah psula may not be posel her from the kuna. Where it says, Ihochi, Chalal, Delab Zaru, Mi Ikara, Lo Lifsol. Where it says, okay, if that's the case, that you require this idea that she is problematic to her, a zar to her from the beginning, then halal should not be a problem. In terms of a halal, halal is one of those people that has a isur likuhuna, and the isur kuhuna generated this halal. So for instance, if a kohen married a grusha, or a kohen gadol married an almana, the child that is born of that marriage is a halal. That halal is someone who is disqualified from the kuhuna, but as far as their ability to marry into Kahal Yisrael, there's no problem. There's no restriction against this individual. That's not we call it bi'ah psula, because you're perfectly entitled to marry such a person. A kohenet, a bat kohen can marry a halal without any restrictions whatsoever. There's no isur even involved. She can marry it. Same thing with the Israeli, same thing with the Leviyah. So what the Gemara is suggesting now is, with regards to a halal, why does the bi'ah of a halal disqualify this woman from marrying a kohen afterwards, or from eating in truma by her father's house? The halal is not a zaretz la meikara. He's not a stranger to her up front, meaning that he's not restricted to this woman beforehand. She could marry him without any problems whatsoever. So why is there a problem then? So the Gemara says, Amakra, lo yichalel zaro be'amav. It says there by the Kohen who marries an almana that he shouldn't do this because otherwise he will profane his children. So you see the focus on lo yichalel zaro, which means mekish zaro lo. There's a hekesh between the offspring and him himself. Mahu posel, avzaro nami posel. Just like he creates a psul here, so too his offspring will create a psul. By a Kohen Gadol, the Almana. It's clear here that when the Kohen Gadol marries the Almana, that not only is the child born from this relationship problematic, but so too is the Bia of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol himself, who marries the Almana, now disqualifies this Almana. He makes her a psula the kuna, and disqualifies her from going back to her father's house to eat truma. So the Bia of the Kohen Gadol impacts this woman herself. Also, what's impacted is if they have a child. If they have a child, that child is a halal. So now what the Gemara says is, the child is compared to the father. The father's Bia creates a problem, which is he disqualifies the Almana. So too, the child's Bia will also cause a problem. So that's based out of the Pasuk. By the fact that the father creates a problem simply through Bia, so too the child, who is a halal, will create a problem through Bia. Zema, Mishat Havaya, Dumya to Kohen Gadol, Be'almana. Maybe, let's say that the restriction here is only with regards to Havaya when you have Kiddushin. Right? The restriction for the Kohen is to marry the Almana. That's what the restriction is. Now, the truth is that if he has Bia with her, it will disqualify her irrespective of Havaya. But the restriction or the Isur for him to marry this woman is to marry her, to have Kiddushin with her. If that's the case, then let's say the same thing with regards to the son. The restriction would only apply or be problematic if he has Kiddushin with her. If it's extramarital in whatever way or manifestation, maybe that should not disqualify the woman. Gemara says, Ma Kohen Gadol Ba'amana B'Bi'a. Just like by the Kohen Gadol, we know that Bi'a affects her. This is your question, Fred. Bi'a creates the problem irrespective of whether he's married to her or not. Avhai Nami Bi'a. So too over here, the Zera, the Halal, through a Bi'a will cause a problem irrespective of it's within the context of marriage or outside the context of marriage. The Bi'a is the problem. How do you know that? It's not so clear that we know that. By the Kohen Gadol, in the Pasuk, it talks about Havaya, which is Kiddushin, and talks about creating a Halal. So that means that if he has married her and has Bia with her, he creates a problem. How does the Gemara know for certain that the Bia of the Kohen Gadol would disqualify the Almana? You shouldn't even explain because here the problem is Lo Yichalel Zaro. The offspring is problematic. Offspring is problematic irrespective of it's within the context of Kiddushin or outside the context of Kiddushin. Even outside the context of Kiddushin, if there's a child born, the child is a Halal. What does that show you? The problem is Bia, not Kiddushin. The fact that the Zera is Pasul shows you that the problem here is Bia and not Kiddushin. So that's how the Gemara learns. The Kohen Gadol's problem is Bia. And now we compare the Zera, his offspring, to him. Just like his Bia is problematic, so too the Halal born from him, his Bia will disqualify the woman. Even though he's not a Zar to her, Mikara, nevertheless, because of Lo Yichalel Zaro, which compares the Kohen Gadol to the Zera, therefore the Bia of a Halal will disqualify a woman from going back to eat Shuma, or from marrying a Kohen after that point in time. Okay, V'Rabbi Yossi Omer. Now the Gemara is going back to the original Braita that we brought. If you remember in the original Braita, it says, Tanu Rabbanan. And if that you have a Bi'a from someone who is Posel, who's that? Ben Techamim V'Yom Echad, who is a Gir Amoni, Moabi, Mitzri, Adomi, all the other things, Kuti, Natin, Mamzer, they're disqualified. Then we had Rabbi Yossi's opinion, which is, kol shizaro pasul, posel. Anybody whose offspring is problematic is posel. Anybody whose offspring is not problematic, then they are not posel. So now the Gemara asks, ma'ika ben tanakama, the Rabbi Yossi. In all of these illicit marriages, the product of the marriage is problematic. Either it creates a mamzer, or it creates a halal. So now where is that instance where the zera is not problematic, and therefore, the Bia will not be problematic? Again, all of these instances have the offspring has a resultant mark because of the illicit marriage. That includes, even if you're dealing with an Amoni, a Moavi, or an Adomi, they still have that status because they will be considered to be an Amoni, a Moavi, through that Bia, through that marriage. So all of these children are marked as Psulim through these marriages or through these Biot. So where is the instance where you have a child who's okay, out of a bia like this. So Ma'ika ben Tanakam Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yochanan Mitzri Sheni, Vadomi Sheni. It's a second generation Mitzri and a second generation Adomi. Because the Pasuk says, Dor Shlishi, they're allowed to join Kal Hashem. Implications from that are Dor Rishon and Dor Sheni, they're not allowed to. But Dor Shlishi, they're allowed to enter. That means that a person who has a relationship with a second generation Mitzri or a second generation Adomi, which is not permitted, that is Asur, nevertheless, the child born of that relationship will be mutar lavo b'kal, because they're a third generation, which is allowed to join the kal. So therefore, a mitzri sheni and an adomi sheni, their bi'ah should not be psula, according to Rabbi Yossi. Their children would be ksherim. Since their children are ksherim, their bi'ah should not be post-sell. So that's what the difference between them is, mitzri sheni v'adomi sheni, ike ben nayu. Ushneem lo limadua elami koin gadol. And they both learned it out from a Kohen Gadol ba'almana. Why? That is the paradigm. Even though the real source is the pasuk of Uvat Kohen lo tiyad ish zar, that's the real source. But as a paradigmatic example, we look to almana the Kohen Gadol. And so they both look at almana the Kohen Gadol and say this, Tanakava Sabar, ma Kohen Gadol ba'almana shibiyato ba'aveira u'pusel, just like by the Kohen Gadol and the almana, the bia is problematic, and therefore it's, and we know that it's posel, Avhai Nami, so too in any other instance, when you're looking for the paradigm of what causes the problem, that is Bi'a Pasul. Any Bi'a Psula or Bi'a Aveira will cause you a problem. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Ke Kohen Gadol. Ma Kohen Gadol Shizaro Pasul Uposel. Just like his offspring is Pasul, and therefore he is Posel. Avko Shizaro Pasul Posel. So too anybody whose offspring are problematic will be Posel through their Bi'a. Lafuke Mitzri Shini Dein Zaro Pasul. To exclude a mitzvah sheni whose offspring are not pasul. Dichtiv, banim ashe yivaldu lehem dor shlishi yavo lehem b'kal Hashem. The third generation is allowed to join Kal Hashem. So they're both using the almanah the Kohen Gadol as the paradigm. The question is, which aspect do you focus on? Tanakama focuses on the bia psula, or bia b'aveira. So that bia b'aveira is what generates the psul. So any bia b'aveira will generate a psul. That includes a mitzvah sheni and a domi sheni. Those are all biot aveirot. And therefore, they're going to create a psul. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi focuses on the bigger picture of Almanah Kohen Gadol, which is not only is it just a problem of Bi'at Aveira, it also produces a child who is a halal, who's problematic. So too, in a case where the Bi'ah would produce a child that's problematic, that is a Bi'ah psula. The exception to that case is an Adomi Sheni and a Mitzri Sheni, whose child would not be problematic. Therefore, their Bi'ah would not be problematic. Okay, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, this was the third opinion in the Braita that we saw in yesterday's daf, which is, Kol she'ata noseh bito, ata noseh almanuto. If you can marry his daughter, you can marry his widow. So, ma'ika ben Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. What's the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and obviously, what's the difference between him and the Tanakama as well? Samarula, gir amoni umoavi ika min ayu. A convert who is an amoni umoavi, that will be the nafkamina between them. Ushnehem lo limamdua elami kohen gadol almana. And again, they use the paradigm of kohen gadol to almana to teach us this din. Rabbi Yossi savar ma kohen gadol almana shizaro pasul uposel. Just like by the kohen gadol, it's a biat aveira. The offspring is pasul, therefore his biat is posel. Af kol shizaro pasul posel. So too, anybody who has a biat aveira whose offspring is problematic, that bia will be posel. We've already seen that. That's the shita of Rabbi Yossi. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Savar, ma kohen gadol be'almana, shekol zaro pasul, that all of his offspring are problematic, the end, it's a biat aveira, posel. His bia will be posel. Af shekol zaro pasul. So too, anybody whose all of their offspring will be problematic, then that bia would be posel. La fuke. What does that exclude? Amoni umoavi. Why does it exclude Amoni umoavi? De ein kol zaro pasul. Not all of his offspring are problematic because of damamar. Amoni velo amonit. Umoavi velo moavit. The restriction against the ger, Amoni umoavi, is only on the male side. It's not on the female side. That's why Ruth was allowed to convert and join Klal Yisrael, because she is a moavit, not a moavi. But what you see from this is that this individual, ger, Amoni, and moavi, that has a relationship with a woman, the children born of that relationship, even though it's an illicit relationship, the male children born will continue to be problematic. The female children born of that relationship will actually mutar lavo b'kal Hashem. They will not be excluded. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if you can marry his daughter, you can marry the woman. The woman herself is not pasul through that biyah. And therefore Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says the exception is Moavi and Amoni. The Moavi and Amoni, whose children are not all excluded, are therefore mutarim. If a woman has biyah with any of these individuals, she still will be able to eat truma, she still will be able to marry a kohen. Obviously, he also agrees with Rabbi Yossi's position with Adomi and a Mitzri, because there all the children are kesherim, and he would have to agree with that. Here, it's even when half the children are kesherim, he still thinks that it's okay. But those are the three different opinions now we have in the Braita as to which biyah is problematic. You have the Tanakhama who thinks that any biyah taveira is problematic, is posel the woman for truma and to marry a kohen. Rabbi Yossi says that all cases of biyah taveira, as long as the children born are problematic, then it's problematic. The exception to that will be Mitzri and Adomi Sheni, Tor Sheni. And then we have Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that biyah taveira, but you have to have all the children be problematic, so he will accept Adomi Mitzri Sheni, he'll accept, and Ger Amoni and Moavi, he'll also accept from this rule because their children are not all problematic, it's only the male children, not the female children, and therefore they would not be posel for truma or a woman to marry a kohen. Alright, the next Mishnah. Ones v'mifateh v'shuteh. So in these cases, someone who rapes, seduces, or someone who is not a bardat, lo poslim v'lo ma'achilin. They do not disqualify the woman from eating truma, and they do not disqualify her from marrying a kohen. But on the other hand, they cannot grant her the right to eat truma. So if a kohen rapes a woman, that woman will not be entitled to eat truma just because a kohen raped her. Same thing with mifateh. A shoteh, who's not a bardat, so again, if he's a kohen shoteh, he will not grant her the right to eat truma because of the fact that he's lacking as a bardat. But nevertheless, the bi'ah from these individuals will not be posel the woman. These are not bi'ot averot in the classic sense that we know, and therefore, they will not create a problem in terms of disqualifying her from going back to her father's house, or from disqualifying her from marrying a kohen. But, imei non-ruim lavo bi'Israel, if these individuals are people who would be problematic marriages, meaning that they have some other disqualification, their imams there, their halal, then harei elu poslim. Not only is the bi'ah improper, but it is problematic and will be posel her. Now you're asking, oh, what's the big deal? We saw this in the previous Mishnah. That's what the Gemara asked in yesterday's daf. How come we have it twice? Why did you tell me in the last Mishnah and this Mishnah about psulim? So the Gemara's answer was, one of them is talking about psulei kuhuna, and one of them is talking about psulei kahal, Machloket Rashi and the other Rishonim, which is which, according to most of the Rishonim, this is de psulei kahal, because it says, Einan ruim lavo b'Yisrael, which is psulei kahal, but according to Rashi, this is psulei kuhuna, despite the language, because that's the greater chiddush, so that's the second Mishnah, has the greater chiddush, but most of the Rishonim view this as being psulei kahal, and that reflects on the first Mishnah to tell us that the first Mishnah was talking about psulei kuhuna. But any of those psulim will cause a problem for this woman. Ketzad, give me an example. Harei, Israel shebaal bat kohen. Israel who now has a relationship with a bat kohen, tochal b'truma. It was an extramarital affair, not that she was married, but extramarital in the sense it was outside the context of marriage, raped her, had seduced her. That bi'ah with this Israel will not disqualify this bat kohen from eating truma, and obviously from marrying a kohen. Ibra, if she becomes pregnant, lo tochal b'truma. She may no longer eat from the truma. This has to do with the problem, like we learned earlier, with an ubar. An ubar is posel ve'inu machil. It's posel in the sense because she's not shaval beit aviyah kinu reha. She can't return to her father's house like she was when she was a young girl because she's pregnant now. That's not new reha. So that's why she's disqualified from truma now, is because she can't be shaval beit aviyah. Now the baby, the ubar, won't feed her because it's a ubar from Israel. So now she's disqualified from truma at this point in time. Nechtach ha'ubar b'me'eha. She, let's call it a miscarries, this baby. Or they had to cut up the baby to remove the baby. There was some problem with the fetus. And therefore she never gives birth to a viable child. So there, in that case, tochal. She can go back and eat. Because now she had to be out with Israel. That doesn't disqualify her. She does not have Zera Yisrael, so she's allowed to go back, and she's not pregnant right now. So all of those things now allow her to return to her father's house, because she can be Shaval Bitaveh Ke'ni'ureha. She is not Bialipsul, and therefore she's totally qualified either to marry a Kohen or go back to her father's house. Even if the child was born and it was a viable entity, if the child dies, the same thing would be true again, that she can go back to her father's house. Here they're just talking about the fact that they did it even when the fetus was inside of her. She's allowed to return. Haray, Kohen, Shabal Bat Yisrael. A Kohen who raped a Bat Yisrael. Lo tochal b'truma. She may not eat in truma. Just because it was a Kohen that had bia with her, that does not qualify her for truma. Because the qualification for truma is kinyan kaspo. She has to be connected to him through a kinyan, through kiddushin. Only kiddushin generate the ability to eat truma. Here it's extramarital in the sense that it's not in the context of marriage. Therefore, she's not entitled to truma. Ibra lo tochal. If she becomes pregnant, lo tochal, she cannot eat. Because a ubar, as we saw before, does not qualify the woman to eat truma. The ubar only qualifies after yilod, after it's born. When it's born, it will qualify her to eat truma. Prior to it being born, there is no qualification for truma. So if she's pregnant with this baby, if she goes to full term and has a viable baby, she will eat truma based on the baby. But until the baby's born, just because she's pregnant, it will not allow her to eat truma. Yalda, again, she gives birth, tochal, then she's entitled to eat truma. Nimtza kocho shel ben gadol mishalav, that the child has more power than the father. The father that had bia with her does not qualify her to eat truma. But the child born of that bia will qualify her to eat truma. So the child has that power to feed his mother truma, where the father couldn't feed her truma. Ha'eved posel mishum bia. An eved disqualifies a woman because of bia. Ve'enu posel mishum zera. But does not posel because of offspring. Ketzad, what is that situation? Bat Israel the Kohen. A Jewish woman that is married to a Kohen. Bat Kohen li Israel. Or the other way around. A Bat Kohen to Israel. So here you have a marriage that joins either a Bat Kohen to Israel or a Kohen to a Bat Israel. In that case, V'yaldai menu ben. And then they have a child. V'alach haben. That child went ahead. V'nichbash ala shivcha. And nichbash comes from the word kovesh. Kovesh, like in the Gemara in Shabbat, means to press. It was actually used like in a dry cleaning press. But over here, it's a lashon genai. It's a unpleasant term. That means that he pressed himself on the shivcha. This is a bi'ah. This is a marriage that is completely inappropriate. It is something that we would not condone in any way. So that's what it means, b'nichbash al shivcha. That he pressed himself on a shivcha. He had bi'ah with her, even though he has no possibility of marriage with this woman. He has a marriage, or he gets married to this shivcha. B'yaldahe menu ben. Now she had a child. Harezeh eved. This child is an eved, because there is no yichus to the father in this case. The shivcha, her and her yiladim, are all classified as slaves. And therefore the child, the grandchild that is born here, is a slave. So again, the marriage in the first place is either to a Kohen, to a Bat Yisrael, or a Bat Kohen to Yisrael. They have a child, a ben. They have a son. That son goes ahead and then has a relationship with a shivcha. And a grandchild is born from that relationship. That grandchild is an eved because the mother was a shivcha. The son passes away. So when the son passes away, he's no longer an issue in any of these marriages. The only one that's left is this grandchild. What happens? Does this grandchild impact the parent's marriage? Now again, remember that if you have a case by a Bat Israel the Kohen, if she has any Zera alive, she's entitled to Truma. Over here, she has a grandchild. Does that entitle her to Truma? On the other side, if she's a Bat Kohen Yisrael, if she has any Zera alive, she's not allowed to return to her father's house. Does this grandchild disqualify her from going back to her father's house? Generally, a grandchild would function in that way. But over here, that was what the Mishnah said, that a Eved is Posel, his Bias Posel, but does not disqualify in terms of Zera. So in that case, this grandchild will not qualify the grandmother to eat Truma. And his grandchild will also not disqualify the grandmother from going back to her father's house and eating truma, because he's not considered to be a zera. It's not considered to be offspring, because he's an eved. He's not miyuchas in Israel. Now, haita im aviv bat Israel. If his grandmother, his paternal grandmother, is a bat Israel, the Kohen, lo tochal b'truma, that will not qualify her to eat truma. This is not considered to be offspring that will qualify her to eat truma. The son passed away. But the grandchild's here, that grandchild is not a qualifier. Bat Kohen Yisrael, it's a Bat Kohen Yisrael, tochal b'truma, she can return to her father's house, because this grandchild will not disqualify her, because this grandchild is an eved. Mamzer posel umachil. A mamzer is posel. Bia of a mamzer will disqualify a woman from truma, also disqualify her from a kohen. But he also is machil. Ketzad. What's the case? All right, bat Yisrael to kohen, ubat kohen to Yisrael. Again, a marriage which involves a kohen to a Israelite or a bat kohen to Israel. Beyaldai men ubat, and they have a daughter. Belcha bat v'niseit the eved. And then this daughter went ahead and married an eved. Tosfot asks over here, why doesn't the Mishnah use the word kapsha again? Just like it used by eved, he thinks that it should use it over here. Might be because of the nature of the relationship, but here it's a woman. There it says the male side, where it's really up to the male to go in and marry. There they said v'nich b'sha, that he pressed himself upon her. Over here, where she's niseit, she's almost a passive character. They use the word niseit. Tosfot still thinks that they should have used the word v'nich b'sha over here as well. Right. Ol de ovei kochavim, or to a non-Jew. V'yaldai menu ben. And now they have a child. Harizeh mamzer. That child is a mamzer. This is the shita of Rabbi Akiva, that a product of an eved and a bat Yisrael, an ovei kochavim and a bat Yisrael, is a mamzer. We don't hold that way. We hold that the child is a Jewish child, possibly pagum, but a Jewish child. For cases outside of Rabbi Akiva, you have to come up with a case where they had a mamzer. It was an illicit relationship. Now, hayta im imo bat Yisrael. If his maternal grandmother was a bat Yisrael kohen, tochal b'tshuma, he will qualify her to eat tshuma. So in this case, where the daughter passed away, and the grandchild is alive, the grandchild is a mamzer, that grandchild will allow his grandmother to eat tshuma, because she has zera. Even a mamzer qualifies as zera. Bat kohen l'Yisrael, and the other way around, if it's a bat kohen l'Yisrael, if she has a mamzer who is a grandchild, lo tochal b'tshuma, she cannot go back to her father's house to eat tshuma, because she has zera that's alive. Mamzer will qualify as zera over here. By a shivcha, the child that's born is not miyuchas in Yisrael, it's an eved. But over here, where the mamzer is still part of Klal Yisrael, that does qualify, that's considered to be zera. There is some discussion amongst the Rishonim about a mamzer that is produced from a kohen. A kohen who has a relationship that produces a mamzer, is that child, a mamzer kohen, entitled to eat truma? If the child is a halal, then he's disqualified from the kuna and he may not partake in the truma. But the question here is that this woman became impregnated from that first bia. Since she became impregnated from that first bia, the child that was born before she got the status of a chlala. She's only made a chlala after the bia of the kohen with her. So that child that's a mamzer, that was produced from this relationship, maybe he's a mamzer kohen, that's not a chalal, and should be entitled to eat truma. On the other hand, maybe you say that that bia, simultaneous with the bia, she becomes a chlala, and therefore the child born is not only a mamzer kohen, he's also a chalal, that would disqualify him from truma. So it seems to me that the Rambam believes that that case, the mamzer kohen will be entitled to truma, whereas other Rishonim disagree and suggest that that child is also a chalal and is not entitled to truma. Kohen gadol pe'amim shuposel. There's sometimes that a kohen gadol causes a problem for his grandmother. Ketzad, what's the case here? Bat kohen l'Yisrael. It was a bat kohen who married Yisrael. V'yalda himenu bat. They have a daughter from their union. V'alcha bat v'niseit the kohen. That daughter goes ahead and marries a kohen. V'yalda himenu ben. And they have a child. That grandchild or that child. Harizeh ra'ui liyot kohen gadol. Omeyed v'mashamesh al gabim zbech. This child is a perfectly good child who could serve in the mikdash, be a kohen gadol, and serve on the mizbech. Machilatimo, he helps his mother out because his mother is a Yisraelite and she's married to a kohen. If her husband passes away, this child will entitle the mother to eat truma. Uposel emimo. But on the other hand, he disqualifies his grandmother from going back to her father's house and eating truma. Zoto merit, this grandmother says, lo kibni kohen gadol shuposleni minat truma. Bni here means my child, but meaning a grandchild. Not like my grandchild, the Kohen Gadol, that disqualifies me from eating Truma. Don't give me a grandchild like that. So even though he's a Kohen Gadol, it ruins her ability to go back and eat Truma. So that's how sometimes a Kohen Gadol has that type of impact. Now the Gemara says, Tanina lahad tanu rabbanan. Our Mishnah now tells us something that we know from a Braita or other places, which is, Shote v'katan shinasu nashim. Shote and katan that marry women, umeitu, and they die. Nishotayim turot min achalitza min ayubum. Their wives are patur from performing chalitza and yubum because the marriage was not a real marriage. They weren't a marriage because a katan is not a bar dat and neither is a shoteh. Since neither of them are bnei dat, their marriage is not a real marriage. On a real marriage, there's no yibum or chalitza required afterwards. That you learn out from our Mishnah, because the first line in the Mishnah is Ones v'mifateva shoteh lo poslim v'lo machilim. So you see that the biyah of a shoteh does not generate a problem because he's not a bardat. So since he's not a bardat, he can't have chuppah and kiddushin. He can't have a marriage whatsoever. So the shoteh doesn't create a marriage. We see that from our Mishnah, and that supports what we say over here. Tosafot asks, why did our Mishnah not mention katan then? Our Mishnah mentions ones, v'mifateh, v'shoteh, should have mentioned katan as well. Because a katan that has biyah will not be posel. He won't be able to create chuppah and kiddushim even, but he won't be posel this woman. Why does the Mishnah leave out the word katan? So the answer he gives is because the Mishnah continues to discuss the fact that the woman gives birth to a child. That would only be possible if the husband or the pasul here was a person who could generate a child. A katan cannot impregnate the woman. So the katan was not given as an example. Even though it would be true in the first part of the Mishnah that he's lo posel v'lo machil, nevertheless, they didn't put it in there because the second stage of the Mishnah, which talks about having a child, would not be relevant by a katan. So even though now in the Gemara we're discussing a katan and shoteh in the same category, nevertheless, our Mishnah didn't mention katan because it would not work over here. Now, ketzad, hare Yisrael shebal bat kohen tochal b'tshuma. Ibra lo tochal. Kevan de Ibra lo tochal. Since she becomes pregnant, she doesn't eat. Lichosh shema Ibra. Why don't we worry about her becoming pregnant? Over here, the Mishnah says, once she becomes pregnant, she's disqualified from the truma. Why is it that once she becomes pregnant? Why don't we choshesh? Why don't we worry about the fact that she might be pregnant from this bia? And she should be suspended from eating truma during that interim period because maybe she is pregnant. Why do we only say when we know for certain she's pregnant, she's disqualified? The fact that she might be pregnant should be enough. Milo tnan. Don't we have a Mishnah earlier on in the Masechta in a case where you had two individuals who married two women and then they got mixed up in the chuppah and each one of them married the wrong woman? Mafrishin otan gimel chodoshim. We separate them from their husbands for 3 months. Shemen meuberetein. To be sure they're not pregnant. Because if they are pregnant, then you have a problem with mamzer, and we want to make sure that the vizera is not a mamzer and is a kasher. So we separate them for 3 months to make sure that any child that's born before that period or impregnated from before that period is a mamzer. Anything afterwards will clearly be from the proper husband. Amar Rabba Bar Vehuna l'yuchasin chashishu l'chuma lo chashishu. For yichus, they worried about it. For chuma, they didn't worry about it. Why? Well, yichus is something that is permanent. Yichus is something that's going to have impact not only for this generation, from generations afterwards. So over there, they worried about separating out the women to make sure the child is not a mamzer, because that's a permanent state. Over here, pregnancy is a temporary state. It's a temporary state that will impact her of the gabei truma, but it won't affect all of her generations afterwards. It's just this woman. What's her status vis-a-vis truma? So that, we were less worried about it. The way others describe it here is that not that it's a comparison between yuchasim being permanent and truma being temporary, but rather that truma has certain kulot associated with it that we allow. For instance, a woman who's married to a kohen and her husband's traveling overseas, we let her eat truma, even though her husband's not present and maybe he died when he was overseas. We don't know for sure. We still let her eat truma, because by truma we're mekil. So it's over here, by truma we're mekil. Is that really true by truma? We don't worry about this. Vatanya, wherever you're bright, so a kohen gives his wife, who is a bat Yisrael, a get. The get says, an hour before I die, this get is effective. She can no longer eat truma anymore, because any moment in time could be the hour before he dies. And since we don't know, we don't let her eat truma. You see from here that we're choshesh for truma in cases where there's a problem. Elo Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, b'nisu'in chashishu, b'znut lo chashishu. In context of marriage, we're choshesh for the woman becoming pregnant. Because over there, she has multiple biot with this individual. Since she has multiple biot with him, therefore it's likely that she might become pregnant. There we write away about pregnancy. In the context of znut, lo chashishu. In the context of znut, which is one biyah, a one-time thing, we're not choshesh. Now, Rashi explains over here, we're not choshesh. Number one, because it's a one-time affair. And number two is because a woman can do the morning after solution. Which is, the Gemara says here that a woman can be mitapechet. She can turn herself over, and that would cause it that she will not become impregnated from this biyah. That's what the Gemara thought. We saw this earlier in the Masechta as well, that a woman is able to turn herself over and prevent herself from becoming pregnant. somehow that will dispel or discharge the semen, and therefore she will not become pregnant. So they think that she can intervene to prevent the pregnancy. And any woman who's involved in znut would automatically do this because, of course, she doesn't want to become pregnant from this problematic affair. And Tosafot actually notes that this will be true in the Mishnah as well with the Shoteh. By the case of a Shoteh, even if a woman is married to a Shoteh, she will do this in order to prevent herself from becoming pregnant from this Shoteh because she doesn't know how long she can handle this situation or stay in this marriage. So he says she will not become, she'll prevent herself from becoming pregnant. So therefore, in the case of Nisuin, where she's not preventing herself, there we worry about herself becoming pregnant, both because of the fact that she's together with this individual and because she's not going to prevent the pregnancy. By Znot, which is only a one-time affair, and she's going to try to prevent the pregnancy, over there we don't worry about becoming pregnant, unless she is pregnant. Ubenisin mi chashishu. Is it really true by Nisuin that we worry about it? Batanya, bat kohen shini seit l'Yisrael. A bat kohen that married Yisrael, umet. And then he died. They had the consummation of the marriage, one biyah, and then he dies. Tovel v'chele b'chumad Arab. She can have, go to the mikveh, be tahor by the afternoon because of the zera, that's the shechvat zera, because of the rabam tumah. She goes to the mikveh, she has tumat erev, by the erev she's totally tahor. She can eat tumah, goes back to her father's house and eats tumah. Why aren't we worried about her becoming pregnant? Why isn't that an issue over here? Amar of Chista, tovel v'chele d'arabayim. This is only true for the first 40 days after her husband passed away. Dilo mi'abra, because if she's not pregnant, halo mi'abra, she's not going to become pregnant anymore because her husband's not around. So if she's not pregnant now, she's certainly not going to become pregnant. Vima abro, if she is pregnant, arda arbaim mayo ba'almahi. And the first 40 days, the fetus is not considered to be an entity yet that has the status of an ubar. An ubar only starts to take on the shape or the status of an ubar after 40 days. So in the first 40 days, after she has biyah with her husband, that one-time biyah, then in the first 40 days, it is irrespective. If she's not pregnant, then of course she can eat during the 40 days, and it doesn't matter. If she is pregnant, the first 40 days are not problematic in terms of an ubar. How do I know that what I said is true, that it was talking about one biyah? Because this would only apply by the case of one biyah. If she was together with her husband for many years or much time before then the 40 days are not relevant. Because she could have become pregnant even 80 days before, or 60 days before. The only way that you could say that it's a 40-day window is if this is the only time she had biyah with her husband, and therefore we're talking about the first 40 days of pregnancy. If she was together with her husband for a time before that, then we never know it's 40 days. It could be 80 days into the pregnancy. That's why it won't work. It only works where it's one case. Amar le Abaye, yihochi ema seifa. Then what are you going to do with the latter half of that braita that says, hukar ubra b'me'a? If the pregnancy becomes visible, then she is messed up retroactively. Because once she's pregnant, then we know she ate chuma improperly. And now she's in a problem because she ate chuma when she was really pregnant. That implies that from the moment she's pregnant, it's problematic. Not 40 days into the pregnancy. It means from the moment of pregnancy, it was problematic. So my mikul kelet, what does it mean that she's messed up? Ad arbaim. Retroactively back to the first 40 days. Meaning that after the 40 days of the beginning of her pregnancy, of conception, then it's problematic. So from the time she figures out she's pregnant, back to the time that's 40 days into her pregnancy, that's the problematic period. Before that, it's not problematic. The first 40 days of her pregnancy were not problematic. So when it says retroactively, it doesn't mean back to conception. It means back to the after 40 days into the pregnancy. What's the problem here? So Rashi claims that this woman ate chuma improperly. Since she ate chuma improperly b'shogeg, she has to pay for the chuma. Karen v'chomesh. She has to pay back the Kohanim for the Truma. Most of the Rishonim say that that's incorrect, that we know from the Gemara in Kiddushin that that's not the case. This woman who eats Truma, Bishogeg, is not have to give Keren and Chomesh because she's not considered necessarily to be a Zar Eitzel Truma, because a Bat Kohen is never considered to be a Zara. Therefore, she never pays Keren the Chomesh. Even when she's disqualified from Truma, she doesn't have the status of a Zara. Since you have the status of Zara, you won't pay Keren Chomesh. That's the criticism of the other Rishonim of Rashi's Shita. The only question here is, did she violate an Isur in eating the Chuma? That's the only question here. Retroactively, did she have an Isur or not have an Isur? So in the end, we are Choshesh, the Gabe Nisuin. And in this case, where it says, Ein Choshishim, Rav Chista limits that to the first 40 days. Again, it's only in a case where they had one Biyah together, and then her husband passed away. And it's limited to the first 40 days. But after that point in time, we would be choshesh for nisuin. And if there were multiple biot, we also would be choshesh by nisuin. Right now, Itmar, now we have a new topic. Haba ala rusato b'beit chamiv. Someone who has kiddushin with a woman and has yet to have nisuin. From the period of time that he has kiddushin until nisuin, the woman is asur to everyone else, but she's also asura to their husband herself. That's what we say in the bracha when we make kiddushin. The bracha says asar lanu et arusot. They made arusot asurin. Most think that that isur is only isur derabanan, not an isur doraita. That means a Torah technically a kiddushin. After kiddushin, there's no isur for the husband together with the wife. But midrabanan, they instituted that they are asurin until nisuin is completed. There's some that believe that's also an isur doraita. So here, the husband went ahead and had biyah with his wife when she was an arusa before they had nisuin. Rav Amar Avlad Mamzer. Rav says the child is a Mamzer. Ushmo Amar Avlad Shtuki. That the child is a Safek Mamzer. The way Rashi learns it is Avlad Mamzer means a Mamzer Vadai. And Rashmo says Avlad Shtuki means a Safek Mamzer. If you go to the Gemara in Kiddushin that discusses this topic and the Machlok between Rav and Shmo there the Gemara has three explanations of their Machloket. In all the explanations, when Rav says the Vlad Mamzer, it's still a Safek. It's not a Vadai. And so most of Rishonim explain here that the Vlad Mamzer means it's a safek, but he has the status of a mamzer versus Shmuel, where it's a greater safek in this shtuki. So Amar Rava, mistavra milte de Rav. Rav's statement makes sense. The daimel me alma, that there are rumors circulating that she had an extramarital affair. Then that makes sense. Ava lo daimel me alma, then if she don't have rumors circulating that she had biyah with someone else, batra didei shadinanle, then we throw it after the husband. We'll assume that the pregnancy came from the fact that this husband engaged with this woman. He admitted that he had biyah with her while she was an arusa. She admits that she had biyah with him when she was an arusa. So if there's no other suspicions of her having an affair with someone else, then let's assume the child that was born is born from their relationship and it's a kasher child. So that's what Rava says. If there are no external rumors suggesting that she had biyah with anyone else, we're going to assume that the pregnancy came from the husband who admittedly had biyah with her. But if there are rumors circulating about someone else, then already we have suspicions, and then we will assume that the child is a mamzer. Amar Rava mina amin Allah. How can I prove to you that I'm right? Diktani. That's why this Gemara is over here, is because it's going to bring a proof from our Mishnah. Yalda tochal. If she gives birth, she can eat truma. Heichi domi. What is the case here? Remember, the case in the Mishnah is a case of ones umifateh. It's a case where a kohen raped a woman or seduced a woman. And then the woman has a child from that relationship, and that child grants her the right to eat truma. Because the person who raped her was a kohen. The child that's born is a kohen. So, hey, chidami, ilay me the daimim mi'almo. If there are rumors circulating that this woman had biyah, not only with this person who raped her, but with other individuals, yalda, mai tochal. When she gives birth to a child, why is she entitled to eat? Maybe the child is not the child of the kohen who raped her. It could be a child from the person who she's rumored to have an affair with. Elalav minei daima velo daima mi'alma. The answer is that there are only rumors about the relationship between her and this person who raped her, but nobody else. So ma'haltam over there, to the ha'yisura, in that case where the kohen who raped her did something wrong, and for people on the outside, it's also a sur. Batra didesha dinilei. Nevertheless, we say that the child that is born is the product of the kohen. So here you have the kohen who did something wrong. And if she had relations with anyone else, that was something wrong. Yet we nevertheless say the kohen is the primary suspect over here because there are no other rumors. And therefore we say the child is a kohen. Hachal de lahai yisur lahai etera. Over here where she is married to this individual. She has kiddushin with him. And that's etera. So he had biyah with her. Let's assume that that's the biyah. Versus her having biyah with someone else who's asur, lo kol shekein, certainly we're going to assume that the father of this child is her arusa. Amalei Abaye, Abaye says back to him, lo umayim lecha. I'll tell you this, kohecha de daimi minei, even when there are rumors from him, afagav de lo daimi mi alma, even though there are no rumors from someone else, amar Rav Avlad mamzer, Rav thinks that the Vlad is a mamzer. It doesn't matter whether the rumors are from her being together with her husband or being together with someone else. My taima, why? Damrina mida afgra nafsha de gabi arus. Since she became promiscuous with her husband, then afgra nafsha de alma. This is a woman without inhibitions. She's not supposed to be together with her husband, and yet she's still being together with him. So if she's willing to violate that isur, who says she's not willing to violate the isur of being an arusa and being together with others? So the fact that she's already promiscuous and her behavior is a little bit suspect, therefore we're going to suspect that she also got involved with other people, and the vlad is a mamzer.
What about our Mishnah? Rava brought a proof from our Mishnah that over here, we assume the child is born to a Kohen. Why don't we have the same suspicion? The fact that she was raped or had a relationship with this man, maybe other people have a relationship with her. They were incarcerated. There were only two of them there. There was nobody else there. So the only father could be the Kohen here. There's no other choice as to who the father is, because the only parties there are the Kohen and her. So if she's pregnant, you know who the father is, it's the Kohen. So you don't have a proof from our Mishnah, because we're making Ukimtin our Mishnah as a case where there are no other parties involved. So Abayi says that maybe in that case, Rav would say that if Lav Zamam's there, even when there are no outside rumors that she had a relationship with anyone else. Rava says no, only if there are outside rumors do we suspect that she had an affair outside of her Erusin, but otherwise we assume that it's the Arus that had the affair with her. Ikadam, right? Some word it this way. Everybody agrees that if the Arus and the Arusa say we had a relationship, that the child born is assumed to be their child. And this is what we meant. Arusa shi ibra, Arusa that became pregnant, Rava Amar Avlad Mamzer, Shmuel Amar Avlad Shtuki, Amarava, Mistavra Milte Derav, Lo Daima Mine, Bedaime Mialma. Rav's statement makes sense where we don't have rumors that she had a relationship with him, Bedaime Mialma, but we have a rumor from someone else, meaning that this Arusa does not say that she had a relationship with her husband, and there are no rumors that she had a relationship with her husband, rather, just rumors that she had a relationship with someone else. Then the Vlad Shbiya Mamzer, of a Daima Mine. But if there are rumors that she had a relationship with her Arus, Avagav the Daima Mialma, even though there are rumors that she also had an affair with someone else, Bachar Didei Shadinimle. We assume that he is the father of the child. Why? Amarova Minaminoa, I'll prove it to you from our Mishnah, the Tani in our Mishnah. Yalda Tuchal. That if she gives birth, she eats. Hey Chidami, what's the case? Ilema the Daima Mine, Evelo Daima Mialma. It's a case where there are rumors that this Kohen had a relationship with her, but nobody else had a relationship with her. Then you have to tell me that she eats? Of course, it's his child. Who else? All the rumors are about him, and they have an admitted relationship at least once. Of course the child is the Kohen's child. There's nobody else to suspect over here. Elalav, what's the case in our Mishnah? The Daimi Nami Mi'alma. There are rumors about her relationship with this Kohen, but there are also rumors about other people. And yet, we assume that the child came from the Kohen. In that case, where the Kohen is Asur, and so is the other party, nevertheless, we say that the Kohen is the father of this child over here because there are rumors about this Kohen, and we have an admitted relationship between them. In our case, the Lahai Yisur, Lahai Etera, in our case, where to everybody else, she's Asur, to her Arus, she's at least somewhat mutar. Over there, Lo Kol Shekein, if we have rumors about her being together with her Arus, and rumors about being with others, we're going to assume that it's the Arus that had the relationship. I will say that even in a case where there are external rumors and rumors from him, that Rav says, I'm a Rav of Vlad Mamzer, below Daime Klau. And our mission is talking about when there are no rumors at all. So the mission is talking about when there are no rumors. Since there are no rumors, and we have an admitted relationship between her and this Kohen, I mean, at least they had Bia once, the only one to suspect, or the only assumption will be that the child was born to that Kohen. That's why our Mishnah says that. But in the case of Rav, you have rumors circulating. Rumors circulating as long as they're external rumors, meaning rumors that it was someone besides her Arus, maybe Rav would agree that this is a Mamzer, because this woman has rumors about having an extramarital affair. The only case where we assume it's from the Arus is where the only rumors are about her and her Arus. Then we'll assume, and they have an admitted relationship, we'll assume the child is born to Arus. But as soon as you have external rumors, we won't believe it. So Bai says external rumors, according to Rav, will designate this child as a Mamzer. Whereas Rav says no. As long as there are equal rumors that she was together with Arus, we're going to assume that the child is of the Arus and not from the outside parties. That's Machloket Rav and Abayi. So here you have two ways to learn Rava. One way is to assume that in the first case, if there are external rumors, that ruins it for her no matter what, even if there are rumors with her and her Arus. And the second Lashon, as long as there are also rumors about her and her Arus, that's enough to say that the child is assumed to be from the Arus, according to Rava. All right, I'm just going to finish up the parak here. Mamzer, Posel, Umachil. In the case of Mamzer, he's Posel and Machil. That's what we saw the example in the Mishnah. Tarabanan. Vizera ein la. She has no offspring. Then she's allowed to return to her father's house. Ein li ela zara. Only her children. Zera zara minayin. How do you know that her grandchildren also either disqualify her from going back to her father's house or qualify her to eat truma if she was married to a kohen? Tamad Omar. Vizera ein la mikol makom. offspring. Zera means anyone. Zera doesn't mean a child. Zera means any descendant. Ein li ela zera kasher. Zera pasul minayin. I only have a kosher zera. How do I know that a zera pasul also impacts over here like a mamzer? Tamad lomar v'zera ein la. They turn dash in the word ein to be ayin ala. Check to see if she has any descendants whatsoever. Kasher or pasul. It says, v'ha fikte l'zera zara. Did you already use that pasuk to teach you about grandchildren? So how can you use it now for a zera pasul? It says, zera zara lo yitzrich kra. A grandchild you don't need a pasuk for, because b'nei banim, hari hen ke banim. We just learned that a couple of daf ago, back on daf samach beram with bet, that grandchildren are considered to be like children. So for grandchildren, you don't need that information to tell me that they're like children. Kitzrich ra, the zera pasul. What do you need the pasuk for? To teach you that even a zera pasul will disqualify a bat goyim from going back to her father's house, or qualify a Yisraelite to eat truma, even if her husband has passed away. Amalei Reish Lokas Rabbi Yochanan, come on! Who is our Mishnah like? Ki Rabbi Akiva, damar yesh mamzer michai ve'lavin. That is our Mishnah, because what was the example of mamzer in our Mishnah? It was an Eved and an Oved Kochavim that married a Bat Yisrael. That's only an Yisraelav. And yet they say the product is a mamzer. That's according to Rabbi Akiva. When it says, afilu tema birabonon. It could even be a case that the authorship here is the Rabbanan. Ve'oved kochavim ve'eved modu. By the case of an Ove Kochavim and Eved, they agree that the vlad is a mamzer, even though it's only an Yisrael Lav. Techi at Rabdimi, Amr Rabbi Yitzchak bar Rabdimi, Mishum Rabbeinu. They say this in the name of Rabbi. Ove Kochavim, the Eved Abal Bat Yisrael of Vlad Mamzer. So even though Rabbi, we saw earlier in the Masechta, disagrees with Rabbi Akiva and believes that Chiyuve Lavin do not produce a mamzer, nevertheless, he agrees with him with regards to an Ove Kochavim and an Eved that it does produce a mamzer. So even though generally he doesn't hold like Rabbi Akiva, in this case, he holds like Rabbi Akiva, that an Eved and Ove Kochavim produce a Mamzer, and therefore the authorship of the Mishnah doesn't have to be Rabbi Akiva, it can even be Rabbi, is the author of our Mishnah. Alright, now, last piece of the Mishnah, Kohen Gadol Pamim Shepusel, Tan Rabbanan, Hareini Kaparat Ben Biti Kuza, Shim Achileini Bechuma, Veni Kaparat Ben Biti Kada, Shepusleini Minachuma. You remember there were two cases in the Mishnah, the case in one instance where the grandchild entitles the woman to eat truma, and there's a case where the grandchild disqualifies the woman from eating a truma. And so here you're talking about a kuza. Kuza is a kli katan, a small kli, versus a kada, which is a very large. So like a kuza is like a little pitcher. A kada is like a barrel or a large pitcher. So the woman says, Hareini kaparat ben biti. I am a kapara for my grandchild, which is Ben Biti, the son of my child, Kuza, who's a mamzer, Shemachileni bitruma, because he entitles me to truma. A Yisraelite, who's married to a Kohen, and her daughter has passed away. This grandchild, which was produced from a daughter and a production that was a grandchild who's a mamzer, even though he's like a nothing, he's a little thing. Why is he a little thing? He's a mamzer. Nevertheless, he entitles her to truma. So she says, Ani kaparat. I'm like a kapara for, I'll discuss that terminology in a second. Ve'eni kaparat ben biti kada. I'm not a kapara for my grandchild who's a big gun, like a Kohen Gadol, shepusleini minachuma. That's a case by a bat Kohen, who's married to Israel. Her grandchild, who's a Kohen Gadol, would disqualify her from Shuma. She says, I don't want a child like that. I'm not kaparat, my child. Now, hareini kapara is an interesting terminology. It's actually used in the Gemara in Kiddushin. It says then when a parent passes away, for the first year after a parent passes away, you say, Hareini kaparat mishkavo. I am a kapara for their mishkavo. Mishkavo here means their bed, but means their death. Bed for their death. I am a kapara for their death. That statement we also saw actually in Moed Katan as well. And we discussed it over there. The Rishonim have different opinions as to what that means. Hareini kapara. Does that mean that everything you do now, those mitzvot are assigned to the parent because you do something special for them, like saying Kaddish, something to that effect, and therefore you bring kapara to them? Or does it mean that you're trying to absolve them of punishment in Gehinom, and therefore you're willing to take some of their aveirot in order to be mechaper for them, literally. You want to help them out. Since you're alive and you can do mitzvot, and you can rectify situations, you take on some of their burden to free them of it. Or is it just an expression? An expression of Hareini Kapara means that I'm willing to take their sins, I'm willing to take care of them, but it's an expression of love and connection to these people. It's not literally, but it's a figurative sense. So over here, the Lashon is also being used over here, which is Hareini Kaparat. I am Kaparat. Now, Kaparat here is obviously not talking about the case of death, because we're talking about a grandchild who's alive. So here when it says Harei Kaparat, seems to be an indication of closeness or affection between you and that individual, and that might shed light on the use of Harei Kaparat Mishkavo that is in Kiddushin. Because here, clearly she's saying, I am Kaparat means that I am indebted, or I feel close to this individual, and therefore I'm willing to be a kapara for them, because they either entitle me, or on the opposite side, they don't entitle me, or they disqualify me, therefore I'm not a kapara for them. Okay, with that, we finish off the perek. Hadran alach, almanah.